This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
We know what City have done this season, but do we know why they've been doing it? Joining me today for a deep dive into City's tactical setup so far this season is Bailey Wynn, founder of the Sky Blue Times, a weekly Manchester City newsletter. It's Friday, the 22nd of March. I'm Adam Booker, and this is the City Report Podcast.
It's here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest
Welcome back to the City Report Podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. If you are new here, before we get going, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. And if you are looking for other episodes from this week, go back and listen to Wednesday's episode with our new feature, The Coffee Corner, where we answered your questions about City. We talked Pep, we talked Klopp, we talked about doing a double treble. So go dive into all of that after you finish this episode here. But first things first, Bailey, you're only making your debut here on the show when City have the double treble in their grasp, so no pressure to make it an immediate impact or anything. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. Definitely no pressure, but nothing like the pressure City are probably feeling right now heading into the running.
Yeah, exactly. Hopefully that pressure is not too much for them to crack under. But we're going to get right into it because I want to go kind of deep dive into the tactical mind, as the kids call it this time of year on City Twitter. I want to look into kind of how City's tactics have evolved from last season's treble win. We'll talk summer recruitment, and we'll see, you know, has that harmed or helped City going into this season, and how things have changed over the months since City kicked off in August. And like I said, we'll start with last summer, because, you know, it felt like in the back end of last season, from about late February onwards, City really found that true identity that we kind of all came to know and love, that went on to win the treble, that, you know, 3-2-4-1, John Stones stepping into midfield and having the four attackers in front of Rodri and Stones, and they kind of found that balance to be able to control games that Pep, the way that Pep wanted to, and also get big Erling Haaland into the fold a bit more after he kind of struggled to get on the ball a little bit in the early parts of the season. But the summer recruitment after that treble win didn't seem to match that identity as much. You know, we saw the likes of Ilkay Gundogan go out the door, Riyad Mahrez go out the door, players that we kind of think of as, you know, these tempo setters that are almost the perfect Pep type players on the ball. And we see players like Mateus Nunes come in. We see Mateo Kovacic come in. We see Jeremy Doku come in, who were almost polar opposite in many respects to the players that were going out the door. Was there a shift in Pep's thinking of, you know, we, like I said, we carved out this identity, but it seemed like almost as if they wanted to throw it away as they got into the summer. And I don't mean that as a negative, because we've seen Pep evolve tactically from year to year ever since he joined the club in 2016. But I think a lot of us felt like it was a bit odd to see that summer recruitment with such polar opposite players coming in.
Yeah, so I'd go straight back to the box midfield first and just point out that without Cancelo falling out with Pep, without Rico Lewis coming into midfield and showing us the way John Stones can come into that position, I'm not sure if we ever get to that box midfield in that time. It may be something in the future, in another season, but a lot of it was born out of circumstance. And then if we move forward to the recruitment, as you mentioned, in the summer, we're losing Gundogan, which is quite a different player to Kovacic in midfield, with his box threat that Kovacic is just not the same as. But then the ball carrying of Kovacic, he's going to carry over longer distances in midfield. So immediately as they come in, everybody knows, okay, there's a bit of a switch in who's playing in midfield alongside Rodri. Then we move to Doku and we look at, say, Mahrez as a kind of comparison to that. Now, I wouldn't say kind of controlled versus chaos for those two. I'd say more Mahrez is the kind of finish article for City. He knows the system inside out. He knows exactly when to dribble, when not, when he can cut inside. He knows his defensive duties. Whereas Doku just didn't have that. The control comparison would come in more when we're looking at Jack Grealish, which I'm not sure in the summer, maybe you can help me with this, whether you thought Doku was going to come in as a kind of direct competition for him.
Yeah, I'm not totally sure because I think none of us probably could have predicted Grealish had the season that he's had up to this point, considering just how key of a role he played last season. Obviously, you know, he's been hamstrung by injuries and various personal issues that have kind of kept him away from the pitch. But I don't think any of us could have predicted that. And yeah, I think probably in Pep's mind, Doku was maybe somebody that could be that dynamic shift when you needed it, if you needed a separate option off the bench when the control style wasn't working as well. But of course, with you know, a smaller squad, which we'll get into later, and when you do lose Grealish for extended periods of time and you do have to lean on Doku, you basically can't play the same way. You kind of have to lean into that chaos a bit because that's what Doku is going to thrive in. And the best we've seen from Doku has been when he's been able to, you know, pick up the ball and run at defenders. And, you know, it's been a bit of a topsy-turvy season for him. But without that element of control, you kind of have to just lean into who Doku is.
Yeah, absolutely. And defensively is something that's come up throughout the season. I've seen different conversations online about Doku on that kind of front. But if you go back to the treble running, defence was one of our strongest attributes. And that came from all the players knowing exactly where their duties are, where they need to be on the pitch. You think about when we're defending our own box, Grealish dropping back, working with Ake, whether it's Akanji, whoever's on that side, Rodri then dropping down as well. They all knew exactly where they needed to be. And when Doku came in, he had this incredible skill set going forward. We already saw the use against low blocks, but making the right decisions in the middle and the first third of the pitch, that's going to take time to learn.
Yeah, and I think Doku was probably a victim of his own success a bit in the first half of the season because he came in and he hit the ground running so well. And obviously he came in, I think he scored the winner at West Ham in maybe his first appearance off the bench. And then obviously he had, I think, four or five goal contributions against Bournemouth. And, you know, from there, it was kind of like not only City fans, but the general footballing world was like, okay, this is a potential superstar that City have unearthed here. And that success wasn't really replicated in the following months. And he became kind of the scapegoat in that period when City, I think they lost, they failed to win, you know, 7 out of 10 games. And there was the 4-4 with Chelsea, the 3-3 with Spurs. And he kind of became the fall guy in that period of time because we weren't seeing those goal contributions. And I really think he's kind of been a victim of his own success a bit.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. And like you mentioned with Grealish having an inconsistent season, if we look back at Grealish when he came in, he's playing straight away from the first few games. He picks up an injury for three games. So then Doku then has to get thrown straight back in. And then Grealish continues to have an inconsistent season, whether it's suspensions, whether it's personal issues, like you mentioned, that meant Doku was thrusted into a role that really he could do with those couple games on the sideline where Pep can say, look, you struggle with this, you need to work on that area, and just give him a bit more breathing room to find his feet.
Yeah, and one man I want to come on to is Mateo Kovacic, because I think he plays a role in this discussion as well, because I was just looking back before we hopped on here, and And he actually started three out of City's first four games, and he played 70 minutes against Burnley because he came in for De Bruyne. So he all but started that game. And it felt like in those opening few weeks that it felt a bit normal with City. They had that control. You know, they weren't blowing teams away, but they were controlling games and they could get a lead and hang on to leads, which became a bit of an issue as we get further into the season. What was the change there with Kovacic? Because, you know, if we talk about losing Grealish and having to kind of shoehorn Jeremy Doku into a system that he doesn't necessarily fit, you know, I see it very simply as being able to stick Kovacic in there and you can have, you know, the three of Bernardo, Alvarez, and maybe Foden behind Erling Haaland. And that, you know, that's enough attacking thrust there. What changed in Pep's thinking, do you think, from the opening few weeks when Mateo Kovacic was essentially one of the first names on the team sheet to kind of being an afterthought in the midfield?
I think you have to factor in the injury to Stones, the injury to De Bruyne, and then think about the balance of that midfield. So Gundogan playing in midfield had the right kind of notion of when he needed to go forward, when he could link up with Haaland, when he couldn't. Kovacic has shown from the first few games anyway that he didn't really have that instinct. He could see a pass to Haaland, but making those runs into the box, he wasn't capable of. So straight away, Pep's looking at that, thinking, how can I add more threat going forward? How can I add more players that are going to link up with Haaland? Hence the use of Foden, hence the use of Alvarez. Although people may dislike it, is somebody who can make runs into the box, make movements into the box. And even though he may not be directly involved in the goals that Haaland and Foden are scoring, he's making these movements that are pulling defenders around. And then if we go back to Kovacic, he's going to operate much deeper. If we look at, say, the game against Spurs in the FA Cup, he's dropping in towards where the back four is. He's very press resistant there. He's working with the fullbacks to help us get out of that build-up situation. But early on, it felt more like nobody knew exactly who was dropping in where and what position they were meant to be in.
Yeah, and I think you hit on an important point there. The injury to John Stones and suspensions early on, obviously, for Rodri was, you know, that was a tough period for City to lose him for three games. And, you know, that hasn't helped the kind of rhythm of being able to fit these new players in, because when you look at players like Mateo Kovacic and Mateus Nunes, and you want to get them into the fold with, you know, playing in and around Rodri and playing out from the back and kind of having to throw them in without Rodri in these three games, and also with Calvin Phillips in there, which turned out to be a bit of a dumpster fire. You know, it's tough to kind of bed them in that way, as opposed to being able to bed them in with a bit of rhythm and a bit of momentum. Looking at just going back a bit, and we're to wrap up on City's summer recruitment. If the summer coming into the treble winning season, bringing in Stefan Ortega, Erling Haaland, Manuel Akanji, Julian Alvarez, and I believe that was it. If that's kind of an A-plus window, which I think most people would look back on it and say it was, this past summer of losing Gundogan, losing Riyad Mahrez, obviously Cancelo is kind of a moot point at this point, and bringing in Nunes, Kovacic, and Doku, what kind of grade would you give that?
I'd probably settle on a B, just because for me, the fact they missed out on Jude and Rice and Paqueta is really quite unfortunate, and shows you, even with Kovacic coming in, and most likely he was coming in alongside those two, you can already see who was going to play in that midfield and what they were thinking of. We see the way Rodri has moved forward now. You'd have Rice being able to play in a six, Jude as well being able to work alongside Rodri. So they were very unfortunate. They clearly identified elite talent that would have worked. We've seen that with Paqueta. But at the moment, a lot of those signings that have come in, I'd settle on a B, just because long-term, they're probably going to look a lot better. Akanji, last season, within a season, has already proven his price. But when he first came in, a lot of people had no idea where he'd get to. So Doku, Guardiol, I think will really kind of excel in the long term. But right now, we can't really go too ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, I think that's such an important point, because I think the summer of last summer going into the treble winning season, I think that's kind of a bit of an anomaly to have all four players come in and essentially hit the ground running from day dot. You know, Manuel Akanji was arguably City's most consistent defender last season. you know, we don't need to say anything about Erling Haaland. The numbers speak for themselves. You know, Julian Alvarez was fantastic off the bench for most of last season. And Stefan Ortega, obviously, in his spells off the bench and you know, playing in a cup final against United and a few times for Ederson when he went down with an injury, has been, you know, essentially elite. I think that's a bit of an anomaly because we're used to seeing these City players come in the summer and slowly wade in and dip their toe in. And, you know, maybe that's what we can expect from the players that have come in this past window. Let's move on to kind of, you know, the standouts of this season. I think we've been hitting on a bit of negatives so far in you know, how things have changed from last season. And last season was obviously supremely successful. But I want to look at who the standouts have been this season. I think there's been some obvious candidates in Phil Foden and Kevin De Bruyne making an incredible return from injury and contributing with tons of goals and assists. But there has been some drop-offs from players as well that I think are worth mentioning. We'll get to that. But in your eyes, who have been the kind of standouts for City this season?
I think you touched on kind of the real standouts, which are going to be Phil Foden is kind of right up there. I think Kyle Walker is definitely had a mixed season, and he could probably be put into both of these buckets, really, early in the season versus now. And then when you factor
he's an interesting role. I'm sorry to cut across you here, but before you go on, I want to mention Kyle Walker because he was a player that, if you judge the back half of last season, it felt like he was almost being ushered out the door because we saw this shift to playing four center backs for Pep, and Walker was kind of used as, you know, a big game man. When Vinny Jr. comes to town, you can throw Kyle Walker in there and he can do a job. But for most of the big games, it was, you know, that back four of Akanji, Diaz, Stones, and Ake. What do you think the change in thinking there was to, other than him maybe being, you know, named captain and therefore has some sort of societal obligation to play every game? What do you think was the thinking there to kind of bring Walker back into the fold more regularly?
Two things I'd probably say. One would be all the intangible stuff off the pitch. We just don't know what it's like inside the training pitch with these players in the dressing room. You may look on the outside and look at personal issues he's had and disagree with them, but when you're actually in a dressing room, you don't know what the relationship is between these players. And clearly he's well-respected. Clearly he's a force in the dressing room. And then the second thing would be the role he's played, because he's playing as essentially a right winger. He's allowing Phil Foden to move inside to the midfield. He's an example for Guardiola as well, on the other side, that he can look towards. So there's so many different kind of factors tactically that he's allowed this team to try something new out, that he's just been indispensable to Pep. But I would also caveat with the fact that I think he could probably do with being rotated a little bit more. I think there are games that Akanji could have come in for him more. And like you said, with Real Madrid, with those kind of top games coming up, you'd want him to be a little bit more fresh than he is for those games.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see how Pep deals with rotating the squad when we get to that point of the season, because we're now used to City being, you know, in this, getting to this stretch where they're going to have a big FA Cup semi-final and probably, you know, traveling for a big Champions League game only 2 or 3 days later. So it'll be interesting to see how that Akanji and Kyle Walker, you know, role gets kind of swapped around in those days. But go on with your standout players. We've said Phil Foden so far.
Yeah, I'd chuck Akanji into the mix on that. I think he's just been, I mean, if you take away the injury he had, he's been excellent all the way through the season. He's played left back, right back. He's come in at centre back. He's managed to convince Pep that it's worth dropping Diaz for a game, a real big game for him. On the ball, passing left and right, like, he's just added so much more. And then when you think back to the games early in the season where we were all having debates whether he can step into midfield, he did a serviceable job. Obviously, it's not to the level of Stones, but within the season to learn that skill, given it took Stones a while to learn it as well, really quite impressive. So, yeah, definitely I'd include him in there. Guardiola's another one I'm a big fan of. I think he's kind of gone under the radar, but without that injury, I think we're having a serious conversation of who starts between him and Ake. I think it's just edged towards Ake because he's had the injury. It's taken him out of there. And then the other one for me would be Rodri. Pushing forward, he's looking at double digits on goals and assists. He's kind of playing like an 8 and a 6 at the same time. He's picked up a lot of the kind of like box threat that Gundogan's had. He's improved more on his shooting as well. Like, he's just become this all-round kind of box-to-box player that's really impressed me.
To play devil's advocate here, has that impacted City's defense in the sense that because you had Ilkay Gundogan who could make those late runs into the box and could kind of just buzz around the edge of the box and not only be a tempo setter, but somebody who could be a creative force behind Haaland and Foden and Bernardo. If Rodri's now picking up that slack a bit, is that leaving any sort of vacancy and exposing the back four a bit more?
Yeah. There's no real way of getting around that fact, is there? When you have Kovacic alongside, we all can see the difference in space that Rodri has to deal with. Stones early in the season, stepping into midfield, he wasn't able to do that because he was injured. So he's always trying to find Guardiola these different ways to cover that space that Rodri has to deal with. But also knowing the fact that Rodri is one of our best threats from midfield as well, isn't it? So it's really quite a trade-off. But I think if we look at the most recent games, we're probably seeing it trend towards where we want it to be with Kovacic in midfield, with potentially somebody else in midfield in another season that's going to look a lot better than what he did at the start.
All right, that'll do for us for part one. We're going to take a quick break. Stay right where you are. We'll be back after this quick message.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. Joining me today is Bailey Wynn, the founder of Sky Blue Times, a weekly Manchester City newsletter. Bailey, I want to move on to kind of looking ahead to the rest of the season. We've talked a bit about, you know, how things have changed from last season and the tactical evolutions we've seen from day one to now. But going forward, obviously City are essentially still in pole position to do a double treble, which is unthinkable that those words are even coming out of my mouth, especially how many times they have come out of my mouth in the last month or so. We've spoken about the tactical changes. How comfortable with are you with where things are now from a tactical point of view? Do they need to change anything? Does Kovacic need to be playing a bigger role? Does Akanji need to be playing a bigger role? You know, Jack Grealish potentially is coming back into the fold in the coming weeks. That could change things majorly, as we've been speaking about earlier on in this episode. What kind of changes, if any, do City need to make down the stretch to defend all of their crowns, essentially?
I'd say pretty comfortable, just knowing that our options are kind of getting slimmed down bit by bit. So if we just take the defence, for example, we roughly know what's going to be our defenders out there. We know it's probably going to be Ake versus Guardiola. We know Akanji versus Walker. We know Diaz, Stones in the middle, possibly Akanji. But the options are kind of slimmed quite down. And then if you take that to the front six, for me, it's probably a question of whether you add Kovacic or Grealish in there, which, again, means that we've slimmed down the front six and we have a much better idea of what that team is. And then the last point would be the two options. So if you think Copenhagen away would be roughly option A with a few different personnel change. And then if you look at the setup for the Newcastle game with Kovacic in midfield and then add in a couple personnel changes, they're probably like our two options, which if we go back to the start of the season, I'm not sure we had two options. I think we probably had more than five and we didn't really know where the season was going to go.
If we're going on the basis of, and this is obviously a hypothetical and a hypothetical we hope doesn't come true, but if we are missing Jack Grealish for more games down the stretch, I'm thinking about, you know, Arsenal coming up and obviously the Real Madrid games. What's your preferred option there if you are without Grealish? Is it Kovacic steps in, or is it, you know, we go with Doku and we kind of lean into what he does and the way we've seen Pep do on many occasions against big six sides this season? Or is there some other, you know, amalgamation of players that would fit?
I'd lean towards Kovacic. I think anybody else, so if we're talking Alvarez and Doku and a few others, we're talking probably specific games. I think both of them are going to be incredibly useful in games that are Crystal Palace and Luton between a Champions League game. But for me, Kovacic is probably the standout.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think, you know, we saw in the second half of the game at Anfield that maybe that was should have been Pep's thinking from the first whistle, that when Kovacic came in, City had that spell of, you know, 15, 20 minutes at the end that kind of settled things down and it looked a bit more, a bit less chaotic. And obviously that's what we're going to want going into these games against very, very good sides. We'll move even further into the future now. And obviously I know we're having this conversation in March when City haven't won any trophies yet. Given the changes we saw from last summer, the summer recruitment, I think, in this upcoming year is going to be really important because it feels as if City haven't necessarily nailed down any sort of identity yet this season. We have, you know, a contributor on this show, Alex Michel, who famously about a month ago or so said to me on this show, he said, "I think I see the identity that City are carving out, and by the next time we speak, I think it'll be obvious." And then the next time we had him on, he said, "I have no fucking clue what the identity is." So is there major recruitment needed in the summer to kind of carve out that identity? Or are we going to go into this summer again thinking, well, I'm not quite sure how these players fit in?
I'd say number one, we need somebody elite through the door. So regardless of what position you're talking about, I don't think we can have another summer where we're going, is this guy good enough this season? I think whoever comes in has to straight away be contending for top 10 of our most minutes in the squad. That would be kind of my first point. And then the second thing would be, who do you think is going to leave? Because if we go back to last season, Gundogan had a lot of minutes, Mahrez a lot of minutes. If we're looking at this summer, I think Gomez is likely to leave. I think Cancelo's probably going to leave, but that doesn't affect the minutes. And then Phillips, again, doesn't affect the minutes if he goes. So if Bernardo Silva's the one, which has been talked about, that's probably the only way you can kind of justify the minutes to another signing coming in.
I've long been a believer that if Bernardo Silva leaves, you have to sign two people to replace him, because I just don't think that you can replicate what he gives you off the ball with the energy. You know, on the ball, he's press resistant. He can play out on the wing and be a creative force. He can play through the middle and be creative. He can drop further in. I mean, fuck, we saw him play left back last season. It wasn't necessarily successful, but it just goes to show, you know, how highly Pep thinks of him and how versatile he could be. So I think if Bernardo Silva leaves, I think that's the major question mark on how you replace him, because I do think it's going to take two people. And is that two elite players, like you said, that's going to obviously cost a lot of money and demand a lot of minutes? Or is that two people around the Mateus Nunes level? Or is somebody like Mateus Nunes somebody who could step in and do that role? We've seen him play out a bit on the wing, but I think you're spot on that. Bernardo Silva is the potential kind of hand grenade here.
Yeah, and I agree with you completely. It needs to be a midfielder and a winger coming in, preferably a right winger. And then that probably leads me to one area of concern for next season, which would be the right wing, because most City fans would agree that they don't want Phil Foden to play there. They want him to play in the middle. But if Phil Foden's your best right winger, then Guardiola's always going to pick him there than the other options. So he's not going to put Foden on the bench to get Nunes out on the right wing or anybody else. So if we're going to get Phil Foden there permanently, we need to bring in a better right winger. I know today I saw a link with Bakayoko at PSV, who, again, very talented player, but would still need the time that Doku's had this season. So that would be something you'd have to toss up. Do you want somebody coming through the door ready-made, or that would need a season or two?
The Foden conversation also opens up another can of worms, and that brings us on to Kevin De Bruyne. You know, I think his role in the coming years is going to be a really interesting case, because I think we all we all saw him come back from his surgery and kind of light the world on fire. And we thought, okay, we're getting peak De Bruyne again. And that's kind of slowed down a bit. He's had some, you know, some niggles, as Pep likes to call them. And he's been in and out of the team a bit. And we've seen Phil Foden kind of, you know, really take the reins when he plays in that De Bruyne role when De Bruyne is not on the pitch. And it's almost felt like the passing of the baton or the passing of the torch from De Bruyne to Foden in that creative role and behind Haaland. So if you know, City fans get their wish and Phil Foden's no longer hugging the touchline out on the right next season or on the left, as we've seen him do from time to time, does that spell bad news for De Bruyne's role in the team?
I'd say it's probably still up in the air. Like, I don't think anybody can definitely make a call. So, for example, I've seen people talk about Kroos and Modric at Real Madrid playing a much deeper role. Now, obviously, they played that for a longer amount of time. But whether De Bruyne can do that as he gets older, you just don't know until we start to see the decline and then he makes that decision. We could get to the end of next summer and he could decide, you know what, I want to go to the MLS. Or he could say, no, I'm going to stay until I'm 38, 39. So that would be one thing. And then that leads me to this talk about Florian Wirtz, Musiala. Do you bring in a creative midfielder? I would say to that, are you going to block Phil Foden's path? Are you going to take away De Bruyne that's going to demand 3,000 minutes at least next season? So that's a big spot to fill. Foden, exactly the same. And then what about Oscar Bob? Where's he going to play? Because he can play in the middle and he can play on the wings. So if you've already got Grealish, Doku on that side, if Savio's coming in and is as good as he looks in La Liga, you're kind of figuring out whose pathway you're going to block. You know what I mean? You're kind of quite stuck on minutes.
Yeah, I think it'll be an interesting one. And I think, you know, kind of quietly, Pep might have some big headaches this summer and the recruitment team might have some big headaches and how to deal with potentially a bloated squad, which we haven't necessarily had for a number of years now, as Pep has kind of been, you know, harping on the advantages of a smaller squad. But with De Bruyne, it's interesting because obviously we can, you know, we can make the Kroos and Modric comparison, but, you know, you can't make a La Liga Premier League comparison because it's a different style of play, it's a different tempo of play. And I wonder if, you know, we're talking about a potential tactical revolution again in the summer. And I wonder if that tactical revolution is trying to fit De Bruyne in without him having to move as much. And, you know, maybe we go back to the four center backs to, you know, to have more protection in front of Ederson to allow De Bruyne to sit deeper. And it's going to be a really interesting summer. And part of me can't wait and part of me can absolutely wait.
Yeah, I'd agree. And what you're saying about De Bruyne moving back, again, if you're doing that to try and make him move less, one of his outstanding attributes is his physicality, because when he is alongside Haaland, it's like having two strikers on the pitch. So you are taking away a big part of his game and then expecting to see a big change. It's not something that's just going to happen overnight. That's something that takes through a season to see that kind of tactical change.
All right, Bailey, I think that'll do for us today. It's been absolutely incredible, and hopefully we'll have you on again soon to discuss all this. And certainly in the summer, if you know, these signings start rolling in, we'll have to call you in to figure out how it all sets up. But thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you very much for having me on.
Listeners, please hit follow, hit subscribe, leave a rating, and leave a review. We will be back at the end of the weekend. Until next time, see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end-of-season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.